curved wooden grips so the gunner could hold the weapon steady. Jammed inside was a black powder rocket with a crude fuse hanging from the side. That was it. Yet the crude weapons had created Kinnison an empire of Vills, unlike anything in the history of the Deathlands.
I'll have to take this apart and find out how a black powder rocket can change course to hunt down a target.
JB tested its balance and weight. Very nice.
Comps?
The Lord Baron is barely able to make black powder. No way he can build ships to guide rockets.
Then how make go left right?
Christie shrugged in reply. And JB gave a start as the tube in his hands trembled slightly at the words. Had the rocket responded to the spoken directions? Dark night, what the hell were these things?
Here's six more.
Dean shoved aside the loose collection of wood chips in the crate.
Nope, there's eight.
Put this away and leave them be.
JB handed back the weapon and watched the boy repack the Firebird and close the crate. There was something unnerving about the rockets that made him want nothing to do with them. Continuing his search, Dean soon had checked every box without success.
No tackle, not even a wrench.
Okay, we try something else.
Leading the way, Mildred and the others returned with more branches from the nearby woods. Ryan began snapping off the smaller branches, then used the ponga to sharpen their tips.
Find a rock and drive these stakes into the mud behind the larger branches under the tires. Maybe that'll hold them in place long enough to give us some traction. Only need a minute or two.
Consider it done.
Doc got busy with the other side as Ryan turned to the doorway.
Christie! This time, rev the engine high as you'll go before slipping it into gear.
Could bust the tranny lover.
No other way. We've got to chance it. If Glassman arrives and finds us trapped, it's going to be bad.
Do my best.
Resuming their positions, the companions braced their heels against additional branches stomped into the mud. It was Jack's idea to give them more stability. Every little bit helped. Ryan joined them, putting his back to the bumper, his knees slightly bent. Mildred was at the other side of the wag in the same position, but he knew it was for different reasons. The healer had to protect her hands.
Get ready!
Christie started the engine again, bluish-gray fumes spewing from the tailpipes as before. Slowly, she gunned the pre-dark engine, building its RPM higher and higher, until the wag was shaking from the barely restrained power of the roaring diesel. On the rusty dashboard, the woman noticed the fuel gauge dropping steadily.
Now!
Ryan shoved against the wag with all of his strength, tendons rising into view on his hands and neck. Spraying out mud, the rear wheel spun freely in the slick material until touching the buried branches. Those shot backward to hit the restraining stakes, which immediately began to lean over. But the trembling branches held in place for a moment, and briefly the tires spun on the anchored green wood, the bus creeping forward a scant inch. Muscles surged as the engine roared. Then, the wag lurched ahead another inch and triumphantly rolled out of the depressions to keep going.
Gaia, we did it!
Christie started to slow down. Ryan waved both his arms at her.
Keep moving! Don't stop or you'll get stuck again!
A hand waved from the driver's window in acknowledgement, and Christie swung the bus in an easy circle, going back for the companions. Wary of the edged spike sticking out of the wheels, Mildred jumped on board at the side door, and Jack used the rear. It took a few more circles before everybody was on board, and the wag moved sluggishly through the sticky field to the distant horizon once more. Dropping into their seats, the companions sparingly used some of the water from their canteens to wash hands and faces clean. Boots and clothes would wait until the mud dried and could be simply scraped off.
Too bad we can't use the road.
Christie activated the windshield wipers. The spray of muddy droplets from the front wheels was speckling the glass, making it difficult to see clearly. Unfortunately, the old blades merely smeared the stuff, making it worse. Locating a puddle of water, Christie drove straight through, and the resulting splash washed the windshield clean for a moment.
Roads are too dangerous.
Ryan belted on his blaster again. The semi and automatic weapons had stayed in the bus to keep them out of the mud. Only the people with revolvers had kept on their blasters while working outside.
Mud like this will smooth out after a while and erase our path.
Also faster. The road follows the shoreline. This cuts through the middle of the island and saves us miles.
If we don't get stuck again.
Driving across the field was becoming progressively difficult. If she slowed too much, the bus would get trapped again. but too fast, and the wheels started to hydroplane on the slick layer of water that hid the tacky mud below. Almost like quicksand and dirt combined. That was an ugly thought. Better watch for smooth areas with no plants growing and avoid those.
Look out!
Concentrating on the driving, Christy didn't hear the warning until the second time Ryan spoke.
Watch for the sticky!
Christy looked to the right, and there it was, charging at the wag. Trying to avoid a collision, she twisted the steering wheel, but the distance was too short. The wag slammed into the humanoid creature, the spiked fender tearing open its belly, guts and blood gushing out. Dropping from sight, the bus thumped over the body and kept moving. Christy glanced at the rearview mirror. There was a pool of blood in their wake, nothing more. The body was driven underground by the weight of the bus.
Damn thing just stood there. I didn't have a chance to swerve.
Probably never saw a wag before.
JB pulled his hat over his eyes and slumped in his seat. With Ryan standing guard with the Steyr, it was safe to catch a quick nap.
Never will again.
Duck started to run a whetstone along the edge of his sword. The blade had gotten a few nicks in the last fight, and this was his first opportunity to sharpen the steel.
Most likely it was attracted to the sound of the engine.
Almost mindless, Stickies always rushed at loud noises and bright lights, such as explosions and campfires. The muties weren't all that easy to chill with blasters. Ugly bastards, too, with their octopus-like suckers on their hands and feet, weird eyes, and almost non-existent mouths. Mildred had no idea how the creatures ate enough to stay alive. Wispy curls of smoke rose from the blackened ashes at the front of Ratuckville. The fire had raged out of control for more than a day, and the log wall now sported a charred hole large enough to sail a Petey through. A muty hunter had already tried to get inside, the thing driven off only by the combined blasters of the Ville sec men and those from the Petey fleet. One against 100, and the hunter still managed to chill 4 guards and escape alive. Damn the jungle muties to Davy. They were harder to ace than the Lord Bastard himself. Standing in the cold morning air, Captain Glassman watched the work crews and sipped at a hot mug of coconut milk laced with shine, feeling the warmth seep into his bones. Out at sea, his crew had spotted dirty clouds on the horizon, and the mornings were getting chilly, which meant that the rains would be coming soon. More bad news. Now, Vilsec men stood guard over the gap in the wall, while his own troopers walked the parapets, armed with firebirds. Using only their bare hands, heavily shackled slaves sifted through the embers, trying to locate the irreplaceable metal hinges for the heavy door. Raising his mug, Glassman used the last sip to toast the slaves' good luck in finding the hinges. If those were lost, or severely damaged, then the Ville was in real trouble. Marching boots and the clatter of weaponry heralded the arrival of Baron Thayer and his personal cadre of guards. They looked well rested and freshly scrubbed, clothes clean and boots polished, unlike the grimy sec men who stood guard during the night and fought off the hunter as it came roaring through the wall of fire. Glassman narrowed his eyes at the sight, sleeping while the Ville was attacked.
Good morning, Captain.
Baron Thayer hailed, walking over to join the man.
How goes the work?
Smiling, Glassman pulled his blaster and slapped the man across the face with the iron barrel. Twisting, Thayer stumbled and fell to the ground. His bodyguards reached for their weapons, then stopped as a firebird streaked over the Ville to detonate in the sky. With hands only inches from their weapons, the Ville sec men glared at the Petey sailors on top of the wall, pointing a dozen of the long black tubes in their direction. Slowly, the sec men moved their hands and backed away from the Baron. Never wavering, the sailors tracked their movements with the firebirds.
Idiot! Thieb! Incompetent ass!
Glassman cocked back the hammer and pointed the blaster at the prone Baron.
Ryan and his people were here, in your Ville, eating their dinner. Right here! You had them in the palm of your muty-loving hand and let them escape? How is that possible?
You dare to strike me?
Thayer touched his aching cheek. There was the coppery taste of blood in his mouth, and a tooth felt loose.
I'm the Baron of this Ville. Within these walls, I rule supreme.
In response, Glassman tightened his finger on the trigger. The hammer fell. Flint scraped steel, throwing off a spray of sparks that ignited the black powder in the primer pan, which set off the main charge in the barrel. The actions took a second to happen, and Thayer could only cringe before the flintlock thundered in the morning air. The Baron's face exploded from the crushing arrival of the .75 caliber miniball. His teeth